from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the first play to be performed at IUPUI's new theater, and it's a lost Shakespeare piece.
I'll find out what's going on at this year's annual Stutz Artist Open House.
And I'll take a look at some world-class contemporary art on exhibit at the Conrad Hotel. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The world premiere of a lost Shakespeare play, The History of Cardenio, will take place at IUPUI in their new IUPUI Campus Center Theater. Travis DiNicola spoke with Professor Gary Taylor, who has brought this play back to life with director Terry Burris, IU School of Liberal Arts at IUPUI, Associate Professor of English Drama.
I know that you both have to be very excited about what's going on. Essentially a new play, a new theater. I'm not sure which is more exciting. I know you've both been planning this for quite a while, but ladies first, Terry, we get to start talking about the fact that you have a theater now at IUPUI, something that you and the students and everyone's wanted for quite a long time have been working towards.
Yes, we've been working hard to get a theater on the campus of IUPUI. There are so many dynamic students and talented students and faculty on the campus, and as we increasingly feel the presence of IUPUI in and around the city of Indianapolis, what could be better than to have an urban campus have a theater and link into the arts world at in Indianapolis?
Well, and you've been, I mean, doing theater at IUPUI for quite a while and using different stages. I mean, you know, working with the Fringe Theater and such. But so now you have your own home. Where is it on campus?
Okay, we are on the corner of University and Michigan.
Okay.
Right in the middle of campus in the campus center.
Right, and where the bookstore is.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay.
Starbucks and the bookstore and all that cool stuff. And it's that campus center came with me to IUPUI 4.5 years ago. So I've watched it develop and get... develop as a heart, as the heart of the campus.
It really is. I mean, I've been there for a number of events and conferences and such, and at any given time of day, it seems, it's just packed with students and faculty and people doing different things, and it's a very lively center. There's, you know, food and stuff. So in that building, which is a great, gorgeous, big building, where is your theater?
It's on the garden level, or dare I say, the basement. But it's beautiful because...
It's the foundation.
There you go.
It's the foundation. Thank you, Gary. That's great. It is on the ground level or the basement of the campus center, and it's got 248 seats and a beautiful stage, and we're getting ready to mount a fabulous production on that stage, and I can just feel the buzz of the campus. The students are dancing around and putting up flyers up and down Mass Ave, and you, of course, you've always been a great support for the IUPUI.
Everyone's very excited about this, and again, not just because it's a great, you know, it's a new theater in town, which is a big deal, but you know, how often do you get to see a new Shakespearean play performed for the first time? I mean, I know you know, from an academic standpoint, this is not exactly the case, but Gary, help me understand, what is this? Because, you know, I've heard people say, oh, it's a lost play, it's the first production. I know there's been a reading of this before. You've been working on this for quite a while as well.
Yes. Well, there have been a series of readings, and I've been working on it for 20 years, among other things. But and part of the reason I've been working on it so long is that when I first started, some of the tools that were needed to solve the problem of this play weren't available. You need massive databases of early literature. And in order to be able to distinguish one person's writing from another person's writing. So although this is talked about as the lost play, if it were a really lost play, it would be lost.
Right, and then
you can't perform
it?
A lost play. I suppose it would be like a Beckett play. Nobody would say anything for 3 hours. But what we actually have is a play that survives only in fragments.
Okay.
And the problem is to identify which fragments are authentic and which have been interfered with. And then once you've done that scholarly work, which is what requires the databases and a lot of very specialist kind of techniques, and that's where my, you know, Shakespeare scholar hat comes in and Shakespeare editor. Once you've done all of that, what you've got is a collection of fragments, and you have to figure out which order they belong in. Mm-hmm. But you also then have to figure out what's missing and how to fill in the gap.
Sure.
And fortunately, the lost play...
I mean, it almost sounds like restoring a painting or
something. Well, it is very much like that. Or the new Beethoven symphony, mm-hmm. where, you know, bits of it are missing. And so what you've then got to do, fortunately, we know that the play was inspired by Don Quixote, one of the great, you know, works of the world.
Many people consider
the
first novel.
The first novel, the first modern, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a modern novel, and an extraordinarily entertaining but also moving story. And so we know it was inspired by this great book.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that Shakespeare and his collaborator on the play, a younger playwright named John Fletcher, which probably almost no one listening to this will recognize that name, but for almost a century he was considered a greater playwright than Shakespeare, more
really?
Popular and more admired for a very long time. And he's the one who succeeded Shakespeare as the leading playwright in the leading company in London.
Was it just that a lot of his works did not survive? Or
no, it's that it's partly a question of tastes in drama.
Yeah. Okay.
In any case, and it also has to do with the fact that Fletcher, most of his plays are written in collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't have as strong a personal identity as Shakespeare does,
okay.
an individual style. And again, it's taken scholars centuries to figure out which bits of these collaborative plays he wrote.
Mm-hmm. Was this play produced, performed closer to the end of Shakespeare's life?
Yes,
is that correct?
It's at the very end of Shakespeare's life.
Okay.
In fact, it's the first thing he worked on after he wrote The Tempest, which people consider his last play.
Sure.
But in fact, he wrote three more plays after that, but they were all written in collaboration with John Fletcher.
I see.
The younger. Mm-hmm. So it was a sort of cross-generational double act. And we know that the play was a big success when it was first performed because it was performed twice within a couple of months at court. And only the best plays got invited to court at all, and to be called back again so quickly indicated that it was a big success. So the problem then moves sort of beyond ordinary Shakespeare scholarship into the theater. And as you know, Terry and I are working on the new Oxford Shakespeare Project here in mm-hmm. Indianapolis. We have always had the idea that in order to edit Shakespeare, you have to think of him as a theater artist.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, once you've got all these fragments together, you then have to decide what's missing and how to replace it.
As opposed to a literary author.
As opposed to a literary author. Mm-hmm. A theater author.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He writes for the theater, and so did Fletcher. Mm-hmm. And they were both veterans, and they were both really good at writing for live theatrical performance. So what I've been doing over the 20 years I've been working on this is I've been trying it out with readings in different theater companies, different actors, mm-hmm. different directors. And so and those began in New York at the New York Public Theater. It was the first reading 20 years ago. And I discovered, you know, I still had a lot of work to do
mm-hmm.
because actors and directors can tell you things that computers can't.
Sure.
And
you often don't realize that. I mean, you can't just read it, but I mean, until you get up on the stage and try to perform it, you don't come across those things that either, yes, absolutely, this flows and works right, or something stumbles.
That's right.
Sure.
And one of the problems with having fragments is you don't necessarily, even if you know that this was written by Shakespeare or this was written by Fletcher,
mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily know what order it's supposed to be in. And since the theater is an art form which is all about time, theater exists, it's, you know, in the same way that a sculptor works in stone, theater works in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sequence in which you do things and is enormously important. But also,
I can imagine you have to have incredibly talented and knowledgeable actors to be
well,
able to get that information.
That's it. But
well.
Also a variety of different kinds of actors.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the most recent reading of the script was at the Shakespeare's Globe in London in November. And Terry and I both attended that. And we worked with the director beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some wonderful performances in that, but there were also some terrible performances in that. And so what you have to do is to, and this is part of the reason for doing it with different groups, is figure out, is this a problem with the script, or is this just a problem with that particular actor?
Yeah.
Fortunately, we have a fabulous cast for this show, and maybe you could say more about that, a fabulous cast of actors and also musicians, because there's a lot of music in this show as well.
Very good, yeah.
Terry, yeah, please. We do, and thank you, Gary, because I really want to talk about the students and the actors in Indianapolis.
And this, again, is not a reading. This is a full production.
This is a full production.
The history of, let me make sure I have it pronounced correctly, Cardenio?
Yes, the history of Cardenio. It's a story that was embedded within the story of Don Quixote and Sancho Panza. Don Quixote. So Shakespeare, Stanley Wells always said that Shakespeare wrote really good plays as long as someone else wrote the story first. So we'll see. But this is a challenging play because it is a cast of 22, and we have brought in four wonderful, talented musicians from IUPUI, and the dancing company, the moving company, choreographed by Paige Craigie, who runs that program. And it's buried in the Department of Physical Education at IUPUI now.
Okay.
So we all have a common goal to create a performing arts center at IUPUI and bring music and acting and dancing under one umbrella, as they should be. But right now we're able to do that with our play. It's we've got 47 cast and crew. Yes, it's a very big production. It's got a very
People don't write
ending.
Plays like that anymore. No, you can't afford to.
No, not at all. And so it's a challenge to orchestrate that many people. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge for the actors to be in a brand new theater that's never had the lights on yet and with a brand new script. That has had readings, but has not been performed in its entirety.
Yeah, Terry, I'm not trying to second guess you here, but most people would do one or the other. Either have a new theater with a play that's pretty well established, or vice versa.
Terry Morris is not most people, I have to say.
Well, I'm jumping in. I'm not sure, feet first or head first, and hope I don't drown. But the actors are really, and the crew are so terrific, and everybody's doing their part and pulling their weight, and the campus center is working hard to get that everything in order so that when we open the doors, we can present Indianapolis with a new old Shakespeare play on a new, brand new grand opening of the theater at the campus center at IUPUI.
And I know you're doing a lot of events that are tied into this, lectures beforehand, things like that as well. It's not just the play, of course, but it's also going to be a great educational experience for the students and the community.
Thank you for mentioning that, because we have free public lectures every day that we perform. And then we have a graduate colloquium for those who are studying Shakespeare out there. We have
or
a graduate
Cervantes,
colloquium.
We have
or Cervantes,
as well.
Thank you, yes. Or Fletcher.
Yes.
A Friday, the 27th of April, is the graduate colloquium. And all day on the 28th, we have top scholars in the field of early modern drama and Shakespeare and Cervantes coming to speak.
And they're coming from all over
and
the world as well. To this event in Indianapolis. We have people coming from France and England and New Zealand and Australia. This is a culmination of a long process which is both theatrical and scholarly, and which sort of demonstrates our mantra, which is that theater is research, is itself a form of research, and it belongs at a research university. And especially belongs at an urban research university, because theater is an urban art form. It always has been.
Gary, let me ask you one more question for you, and that is, what's the next step for this play? After this production, what do you envision
After
happening?
This production, you're asking me. Right now I can't see anything until this production is over. There's a book coming out from Oxford University Press about it. Terry and I both contributed to that book. We're putting together another book, which is going to come out of the academic conference and all the public lectures mm-hmm. on Shakespeare and race, Shakespeare and Cervantes, about this play and issues of sexuality and alternative sexualities. So there is all of that, but I will eventually publish this text, but I have not been willing to publish it until mm-hmm. there was a full-scale production
sure.
of the kind that you know Terry and IUPUI are now putting on, because I have still been learning
this
about...
It's still a research process.
It's still yep. a research mm-hmm. process. Mm-hmm. I've still been learning about the script, about the play, its problems, solutions, from the actors, from Terry as a director, from our designer, from everybody. I'm seeing things in the raw materials mm-hmm. That I hadn't seen before. And I will undoubtedly learn from the performances themselves.
And how the audience reacts, of course.
The audience is a crucial part of this experiment. Mm-hmm. And there will be a talk back after every performance. We want to hear and see how audiences respond to this in terms of...
What an amazing opportunity for an audience.
Yes.
I mean, how often do you get to, you know, have an influence mm-hmm. on a Shakespearean play?
Well, exactly.
Well, probably not that often. So,
yes.
yeah, this is...
But Shakespeare, of course, you know, every theater artist mm-hmm. learns from audiences all through their career.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that Shakespeare and Fletcher were both great theater artists is that they could learn from the audience in the way that actors do. Mm-hmm. Actors respond to audiences all the time.
Of course.
Playwrights also have to learn to respond to and learn from audiences. And Terry and I believe, and this is crucial to our work on the new edition of Shakespeare's works for Oxford University Press, that audiences and editors need to interact in this way
mm-hmm.
in the laboratory of a proper theater.
Well, let me then turn the question to Terry. What is the next step for this proper theater? Once this production's been mounted and then the stage is cleared afterwards, what next for you?
The Campus Center has developed this theater in a way that it can be used by all the performing arts departments in the school,
mm-hmm.
in the university, and it can also be used for film studies and film series and things like that. But for me, I am, as you know, I have a vision to create a BFA, MFA program in theater, in particular in early modern theater and classical drama. And so I am hoping that we will get the support from the community and from the university that we need to make that next push to bring theater not just to IUPUI, but back to IUPUI,
yes.
because I understand it was here at one time and left. And we're calling this a resurrection event because there are some...
In more ways than one.
Travis DiNicola with Professors Terry Burris and Gary Taylor. Their production of the lost Shakespeare play, The History of Cardenio, is presented by the IU School of Liberal Arts at IUPUI and Hoosier Bard Productions with 7 performances. The play opens on Thursday, April 19th at the new IUPUI Campus Center Theater. Visit liberalarts.iupui.edu/cardenio for more information. That's CARDENIO. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Raymond James Stutz Artists Open House, the organization's 19th annual, is April 27th and 28th. More than 70 artists will open their studios to visitors during the 2-day event. It's a great place to buy one-of-a-kind gifts. Artwork ranges from $12 to $10,000, and the event offers a rare chance to see vintage cars in the historic Stutz Car Factory. Visitors also enjoy special opening activities such as acoustic music and food vendors. Sharon Gamble invited Stutz artist Carol Myers and Joseph Krohn to our studios to learn about the event from the inside out.
Carol, how long have you been affiliated with the Stutz Artists Association?
I believe I've been in the building 5, maybe 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and this is my first year as the president of the Stutz Artists Association, and my second year being in charge of the open house.
What did you get drafted to be president, or did you volunteer?
I volunteered.
Good girl. And was it what you expected? I mean, what all? Everybody, you say Stutz, and everybody automatically thinks the spring open house, but you're right there and you're busy the entire year. I'm aware of that.
It's an incredible opportunity to not only have my own space to work, and I've seen a definite change in my work since I've been keeping regular hours, but there's also...
Wait. Tell me about that change. What has the change been like?
Well, it's a deepening, and it's a consistent working forward, so it's not this fitting it in around other things. And I think the fact that I'm in an organization or a building, basically, where we have people we can chat with if I have an issue with a piece of work that I'm doing, or if it's new that and I'm not sure how to feel about it, I can go down the hall and hunt somebody up that I respect and talk about it.
That sense of community strikes me as super important. And Joseph, I want to bring you into this conversation. You're young enough that I'm wondering what your first exposure to the Stutz building and community of artists was. Did you go to an open house when you were a kid a couple years ago?
Actually, I'm somewhat fairly new to the art scene here in downtown Indianapolis.
Okay.
So I was extremely overwhelmed, you know, in a great, you know, way.
Sure.
But I first met up with Andy Chen. He used to do some of my prints a few years back before applying for the residency.
Mm-hmm.
But after doing so, I mean, it blew me away, the sense of camaraderie between each artist and the support that you get. You know, it's been amazing.
And the residency itself, it strikes me that just having the good housekeeping seal of approval of winning the residency might be in some ways as rewarding as having the studio.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, even being considered one of the top six before the interview process, I was just, you know, really flattered. And then to actually go on, you know, and kind of describe my work in front of a panel, that alone was just... it was really nice to actually be able to talk about my work in front of peers that you look up to.
Sure. And we should connect the dots between the open house and the residency for folks in case they're like, I'm not getting it.
Absolutely. The open house is basically the only fundraiser that the Stutz Artists Association puts on. We're a 501c3, and one of the things that this fundraiser pays for are these residencies that we offer every year, as well as helping to maintain our Stutz Art Space Gallery. This year we're really excited because we have a 3-year title sponsor in Raymond James. So we'll be the Raymond James Stutz Artist Open House, and they are incredibly supportive of putting support into the arts and
That's
money
great.
Into the
Congratulations.
Arts.
Congratulations.
And so we're really excited. They're looking at a lot of ways that they can help us promote our artists.
Man, that's a step forward and has to make you feel really great. Yeah,
absolutely.
So it's over the years the open house has changed a little bit, but it's still a very different feeling between Friday night and Saturday. What is the Friday night experience like for somebody who's never been?
Well, the Friday night experience is perhaps a little bit more frantic and a little bit more party-like.
Mm-hmm.
We're still really focusing on getting people to look at art, consider purchasing art, but there's also food and music and just a lot of things that are kind of exciting. We get a lot of people coming Friday night. It's kind of a party atmosphere. So we tend not to have so many children-friendly things happening Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, alternatively, we're going to have the Heron School of Art community outreach program again, having a hands-on experience with young people, and also their very special artists will have an opportunity to show at the Stutz Open House.
That's great.
So we're excited about that.
And Saturday doesn't start terribly early.
That's correct. Saturday starts at 2 and
right.
It goes to 7. We still have music. We still have things to eat. We'll also have Raymond James handing out free ice cream like they did last year.
Cool.
So that's a good thing. And again, we'll have these young people also there to show their art and be a part of the atmosphere.
I understand that last year you had some folks, and this was part of your strategy really, was to get people to come Friday night, participate in the party atmosphere, get attracted to some works, go home, sleep on it, come back to buy on Saturday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Saturday is a little bit, you get a better chance to talk to the artists, and I think a lot of purchasing and owning and collecting of art has to do with making that kind of a relationship with the artist.
Sure, sure.
So it's a little bit more laid back, but it's very satisfying for those of us who like to talk about our work.
Sure. Joseph, I want you to describe your work for people who haven't had the chance to see your output yet.
Well, I do photorealistic drawings, mainly of the figure and various environments, usually in black and white, sometimes in color, but I just use mainly colored pencil on a frosted acetate. And I kind of focus mainly on the emotion that these individuals will bring to the environment, kind of like a storytelling of the human mind is kind of what I go for.
Why acetate?
Well, it's actually a lithography process, a printmaking process that I kind of stumbled upon when I was at Heron, and I just kind of fell in love with it, you know, the way the pencil would actually, you know, contact the acetate is just, you know, when you fall in love with a medium, you know, it just clicks like that immediately.
Sure.
And that's what happened.
So it's a different sensation than working on paper.
For the most part, I also utilize a kind of like a plexiglass drawing board, which kind of makes it more smooth and, you know, I guess pressure sensitive.
Mm-hmm. How do you work? Do you work from life? Do you take a photo of your subject and then so you have a little more leisure time?
Yeah, my drawings take quite a while. I would say on average, if I were to do a 8x10, that would probably go around 40 hours of work.
Mm-hmm.
I usually use jeweler's magnifying glasses, but I do start out taking photos. I take multiple, like probably hundreds of photos just to get it right. And then I kind of piece things together to make everything work compositionally.
Are your photos posed or are you doing candids?
A little bit of both, actually. Mm-hmm. I kind of have a loose script and then kind of let the model do their own thing, so it's natural.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing stressed or anything like that.
Yeah. What does, and I realize that if you, this is kind of an odd question, but what does using pencil allow you to do that using the camera doesn't allow you to do?
Good question. Well, you could definitely, like from afar, my work could be considered like, you know, it looks very photographic,
like a photo.
Which can, you know, confuse people. But actually walking up on it, you could definitely see the mark making. I think fooling the eye has always been one of my things I've tried to achieve while still keeping the integrity of the drawing, you know, through mark making. And if you were to really go up on one of my drawings, you could kind of see the patterns that I create to simulate, you know, these different textures and environments.
So to differentiate skin from a beard, for
exactly.
example.
Yeah. Yes.
How do you decide what the emotional angle is?
Honestly, it just kind of comes to me through, you know, various inspirations. You know, I'm really into film noir. Kind of the 30s, 40s kind of era. So I kind of, you know, I try to have a borderline creepy, you know, nothing too extreme.
Atmospheric,
vibe.
It sounds like.
Yeah. You know, I feel that, you know, it brings a lot more to the table than your traditional just like portrait work and, you know, which there's nothing wrong with that by any means.
No,
but
no.
I just wanted to bring something new to the table that no one has really seen before.
What is your process like? Are you working on multiple pieces at once? Do you just power through? You mentioned about 40 hours for one work. Do you have a a strict, a rigid work schedule for yourself?
It's really not that strict. I just basically put in the time when I can.
Sure.
We have a 5-month-old at home right now.
Oh, okay, so I understand.
So on top of that, and then working full time, you know, as a server, you know, you just basically try to find time whenever you can.
Sure, sure.
And yeah, going back and forth. I have 2 setups, basically. You know, the residency at the Stutz, mm-hmm. which has been amazing. You know, I could kind of separate everything. And then I have 1 set up at home, which is more of a casual kind of, you know.
There's no baby spit up in the Stutz studio.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have those distractions.
Have you had much chance to take advantage of what Carol was referencing, the joys and opportunities and resources of being part of a community of artists? Do you find yourself occasionally walking down the hall and saying, I'm blocked, I'm stuck, or just, I'm ready for a break, I want to go talk to somebody?
No, I mean, sometimes, you know, I feel that way. And Travis Little is there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that we first met at the Gallery 924 figurative show that we were both in.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, when I found out that he was part of the Stutz and, you know, he kind of will coach me here and there. And, you know, it's been really nice to have him available.
Sharon Gamble with Stutz artists Carol Myers and Joseph Krohn. The Raymond James Stutz Artist Open House is Friday, April 27th from 5:30 to 10:30 p.m. and Saturday, April 28th from 2 to 7 p.m. It's at the Stutz Business Center. That's 1060 North Capitol Avenue. There is free event parking in designated lots and free on-street parking on Capitol and Senate Avenues and 11th Street. Learn about the open house at stutzartist.com. That's S-T-U-T-Z artist.com. And you can learn more about Joseph Krohn at josephkrohnart.com. And learn more about Carol Myers at carolmyers.com. And that's CarolMyers.com. Well, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
I always found it a little creepy, those guys that dressed up as Easter bunnies in, like, department stores when I was a kid. It's different, from Santa Claus.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of, like, this 6-foot-tall bunny jumping around your yard, breaking into your house, leaving eggs. Anyway, but that's not why we're here. We're here for that calendar.
Wait, who left rotten eggs in your egg hunt?
Well, maybe just plastic ones.
Okay.
So let's...
We're going to find some treasures on our calendar we call What'll We Do?
Actually, and this one is Easter related.
Hop to it.
Oh, nicely done. Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's production of Superhero is going on this weekend, and it is the superhero story of a man called Jesus. So it's a very appropriate production, dance theater, going on this weekend at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. And the final performance is on Saturday night at 8 p.m. on April 7th. So definitely worth checking out if you're looking for some really interesting dance theater that's Easter appropriate.
Excellent, excellent. Well, dreams of a better world certainly appear in Leonard Bernstein's Candide, and it's being produced by Indiana Opera Theater next weekend and this weekend. And next weekend, this Saturday and Sunday, and next Friday and Saturday. So you can find out more about that online at music.indiana.edu/opera-ballet Candide in Bloomington.
Very good. Some cool stuff coming up at Butler as they wrap up their spring semester. The Butler Theater is concluding its performance season with The Love of Don Perlimpalin for Belisa in the Garden. And it's a graphic novel that's been turned into a theater piece on how deception can reveal the nature of eternal love. And that previews starting on April 11th and then runs April 13th and 14th. And then also Butler Ballet is presenting Coppelia, one of my favorites, the E.T.A. Hoffman Ballet. And they're performing that on April 20th through the 22nd in this final performance of their season. And that will be at Clues Memorial Hall.
Well, speaking of things that herald the coming of spring, the St. Benno Fest is coming up at the Athenaeum. You'll hear more about it on next week's show. But if you're looking for something fun to go out and do and maybe celebrate some German heritage, yours or someone else's, you don't need mm-hmm. to be German to go to the St. Benno Fest. That's coming up Saturday, April 28th at 7 o'clock in the Athenaeum Auditorium. Proceeds benefit the Athenaeum Foundation, which helps
upkeep and maintenance of that great old building. What are you going to do? Well, it's a 21 and older event because you're going to celebrate the arrival spring with Sun King Brewery, a special brew for that night. And there's a yodeling contest, and Polka Motion will be performing as well.
And again, that's St. Benno, not Bino.
That's another festival.
And if you're looking for a field trip, then you might want to consider checking out the 6th Annual Phantoscope High School Film Festival, which is taking place at the Richmond Art Museum in Richmond, Indiana, of course. And it features short films made by student filmmakers from all across the Midwest. It's a juried competition with prizes for writing screenplays and editing and acting and more. And there's cash prizes, and it is a very, very cool festival for young filmmakers. And it is on April 28th with a panel discussion at 5:30 with experts talking about how to make a film. And then the screenings take place at 7 p.m. again on April 28th, and that's at the Richmond Art Museum in Richmond, Indiana.
Hey, you might be from Chicago, or maybe you just love Chicago. If the Windy City holds a special place in your heart, listen up. On Saturday the 14th, that's this coming Saturday, next Saturday I should say, stories with a Chicago accent will be told by Sid Lieberman as part of Storytelling Arts of Indiana's series. That's at 7:30 at the Basile Theater at the Indiana History Center. Sid Lieberman is one of the country's leading tellers of Jewish stories, and he has a vast repertoire ranging from personal stories to historical pieces, and his signature versions of literary classics, in particular those by Edgar Allan Poe.
Wow.
Yeah, very interesting guy. You can find out more at storytellingarts.org. That also takes place the same night as Storytelling Arts fundraising event, so you can go to one or both. Find out more at storytellingarts.org.
Cool. Hey, a Jabberwocky event is coming up at the Indie Fringe on April 10th from 5:30 to 7:30. It's free admission, and it includes appetizers and a cash bar. And what's going to be the topic for this Jabberwocky, because it's basically always people getting together and sharing stories, Ron Spencer, Gail Steigerwald, Ellie Sellers are all going to be talking about the Black Curtain, which was the first professional dinner theater in Indianapolis. And they'll be talking with Karen Galvin. They'll have a night of stories. And if you remember the Black Curtain Theater or had an experience there, then you're welcome to share your story as well during the open mic part of it.
Boy, that's,
I don't even know where the Black Curtain was.
That's a trip
was,
in the
Sharon,
Wayback Machine, as I understand. And it's where the Talbot Street Bar is now.
Ah, very interesting.
It was gone by the time I got here, I'm sad to say. Mm-hmm. So that should be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you heard about this. Travis did a nice interview about IYG's annual art auction. That's coming up Saturday the 14th at the Wheeler Arts Community. Just a reminder that there's stuff to eat, stuff to drink, but most importantly, a chance to see these amazing works of art and support a great cause. More information about that is available online. Enter indianayouthgroup.org.
We'll have to find out what else people have come up with to celebrate the end of Lent next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
One expects to find world-class contemporary art in a museum, of course, but in a hotel? That's exactly what you'll find in the downtown Conrad, Indianapolis. The current exhibit is titled A Toast to Pop Art, and it includes works by Andy Warhol, Keith Haring, and Robert Indiana. Later this month, they'll open Before They Were Famous, Behind the Lens of William John Kennedy. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Conrad's general manager, Greg Tinsley, about the art and how their staff are trained to be art ambassadors.
This is really interesting to me that the Conrad is now also an amazing art gallery with, I mean, world-class art. But I was thinking about this, Greg, before we got together, and historically speaking, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but, 100 years ago, very few people got to see new art in museums and not even in galleries. It just wasn't something that was sort of part of the landscape. Most of the time that people would go out to see art in public, it would either be in hotels or department stores. And then it was you know, those were the areas where people would gather and see what, you know, the art was, and many hotels in big cities and many department stores in big cities would sort of fill that role. And of course that's changed over the years, but historically speaking, to have art in a hotel is not that unusual, at least historically. But yet at the same time, I know people are like, art at the Conrad, what's that about? So I'm going to ask you, Greg, art at the Conrad, what's that about?
Well, first of all, we're on the right path, because I never really thought about that far back into the history. So two things we were trying to accomplish, and I think we've done that, was to make it more attainable so that everyone could come in and enjoy it, both in the public spaces and then if they're an overnight guest or attending events. And secondarily, was to bring it into an environment that was just warm, welcoming, comfortable, again, just to invite people in and to enjoy it and to reap the benefits of what art really brings.
That's a really great idea. I mean, certainly all hotels are, you know, sort of stuck with the problem, if you will, of how do we decorate our walls and how do we make it inviting. And often, you know, many hotels just sort of go with something kind of nondescript. But I mean, first of all, to say we're going to bring in world class art to have on our walls is a pretty big decision to make.
Absolutely, it was really purposeful in its plan. The concept in the beginning was to really work on becoming a destination property here for Indianapolis. Certainly, we were fortunate with the owner's courage and so forth, putting that luxury brand here in our great community. And then we really just worked on creating a great destination with Capital Grille, with tastings, with our Evan Todd Spa and Salon, with all of our partners. And then really the art idea came in just trying to create a social gathering spot. You know, whether you're going out to the ISO or you're going to the IRT or you're just going to Capital Grille for dinner, to have not just something that an overnight guest or an attendee at one of our great events is attending, but the community could literally come there, meet, maybe have a glass of wine in the lobby, enjoy the art. And to me, that's what luxury is. And it does take you back. I mean, you know, it was like when you used to put on a coat and tie to fly in an airplane, you know, I mean, it's kind of reminiscent of that. But now you can come into the Conrad and flip flops and see world class art, however you want to do it.
I have to say, so about maybe a month ago, I was at tastings.
Yes.
And then I had left tastings and I was walking down sort of a hallway off the side. I was, you know, looking for the men's room. And there were a couple prints of some great, you know, work from the 60s and 70s and some gorgeous works. And I, you know, came back and, like, you know, told my wife, you've got to come see this.
Good, you know? Good. Well, hopefully. I mean, she did.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that alone, you know, it's not just like in the main lobby, but also sort of in the halls off. I mean, it really seems to permeate what you're doing.
Yeah, it really does. You know, right now we are featuring in the main lobby a series called Pop Art. And we're certainly featuring some of the, you know, iconic superstars of our that type of art with Andy Warhol, Robert Indiana, our own very own Robert Indiana. And then we also and that rotates right now. That's going to conclude here towards the end of May. And then we'll bring something else into the lobby. We just before Pop Art, we had everything was Marilyn Monroe. And we had an event called Mimosas with Marilyn. So really trying to do things where, and we're always looking for anything where there is any charge associated with it at all. When we do any kind of artist reception, we're looking for someone in our community to share those proceeds with. And we've been very successful doing that, certainly made a lot of friends, and hopefully are doing our part corporate citizenship-wise to make these not-for-profits, you know, be able to function, especially in this day and age.
Well, no, that's a great thing you're doing, a great way to bring people together in this. Now, the art itself is any of the art for sale?
It is. It's very discreet. You know, we certainly don't want to have it be, you know, if you're interested in growing your collection, we're going to help you. If you find something that's of great interest, and we've tried to have really a great variety in some of our public space on the second floor where more of our meeting space is, we're featuring three regional masters. We've got Constance Edwards Skopelidis, who's very well known in this market. She does. We featured one area for her. We have Walter Kanabi in one area, great guy. I'm sure you know
him. Very well known for his prints and wallpaper.
Absolutely. And then we have Lois Maine Templeton, who is just back in town. She's now residing in Maine, but she's been with us for about the last week or so, and we had a great celebration with her. About a week ago. Yeah, and so we're featuring all that work, and then we tend to have things in the lobby that are more driven towards an exhibit. Like this Pop Art is going to really have the finale for the Pop Art event is going to be an event we're going to do April 28th. And it's going to be Before They Were Famous, behind the lens of William John Kennedy. So that's kind of that finale piece, and that's going to be phenomenal. That's going to be an event where we're going to feature 50 or 60 pieces of photography that has never been seen before.
Wow.
It's museum quality, and it's going to be on exhibit after an evening, a wonderful evening where we're going to have a reception, dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually having Mr. Kennedy and his wife are in attendance. Ultraviolet, who was a big celebrity back in the day, with
part of the Warhol and the factory and all
she's
that.
She's there with us, so we've flown all of those folks in to be there with us that night for dinner.
Of course, and Walter Kanabe also worked with Warhol.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's interesting. You know, our regional masters all have a tie here. They've all attended school at Heron at some point. As you know, Walter and Constance still have great galleries here.
Yep.
Still, studios do a lot of work here. Lois actually still has a studio here. She's working in that this weekend. So it's been, or this week. It's just been a lot of fun for us to learn.
So for visitors who want to come check this out, is there any, it sounds like the artwork is changing quite a lot as far as what's on the walls. Is there a schedule that's posted, or is it just best to drop by sometime and ask someone at the front desk, hey, I want to see some art.
How does
that work for someone who's not necessarily a guest at the hotel?
Sure.
You know.
Well, absolutely. If there's any big thing, like if there's any big celebration, like one of these regional artists where we're doing a reception, we send out invitation, we post it. We communicate a lot through the Arts Council of Indianapolis. We have many ways that we get the word out through Facebook and Twitter and all that, because those are literally, not meant to be so exclusive that they keep anyone from joining us. So those are always open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, we'll auction off a piece of their art or something like that so that we can make a contribution to an organization. But one of the key ways that we have communicated it is it was a really unique experience. We partnered about a year ago with a wonderful lady named Rhonda Long Sharp.
Mm-hmm. And she's a curator, a fine art curator.
She's a fine art curator, great lady. She and I just met and, both had kind of same ideas, but, coming at it from different angles, and it was a great marriage for the two of us. And she's came in and helped us do a general orientation to all of our staff. I mean, literally, we're getting an education on art.
I mean, Greg, that's kind of a pretty cool thing for a hotel to do. Not just to have the art, but the fact that you've got art ambassadors on your staff
who
are very knowledgeable, but then all the staff really know something about it. I mean, you're obvious. You've learned a lot, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, we have. And it's, I'll tell you, Travis, it's actually, I tie some of our great retention to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really can hang on to people, especially the generation of people that we're putting in the key contact areas, to keep them involved, to keep them engaged, to keep them on board is not always the easiest thing to do. There's a lot of people after this great young talent. Yet they're able to walk and work in an environment where there's this world-class museum-quality art that's still very attainable. None of it's behind anything. You can walk up to it, look at it. We have QR codes that you can talk.
Staff are like, oh, come on, why do I have to learn about the art,
Haven't really ran into it. Now, we don't force feed it. It's a general orientation. It's certainly one of our service standards that you have to be generally well-informed about everything in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We did voluntarily say, is there anyone who really wants to get into this thing? And we've got about 15 art ambassadors, and we meet on a monthly basis with Rhonda and her team. Like when Lois is into any of the artists, all the regional masters have spent hours with that group to really get us to understand and to appreciate some of their inspiration. Because what we'll do, whether you're a guest or not, whether you're staying with us or not, we'd be more than happy to have one of those art ambassadors walk around with you, kind of speak to you, give you a little tour. You can certainly take a self-guided tour as well. We have it all mapped out, on an iPod or an iPad that's in the lobby, and little QR codes that'll walk you through the whole thing.
That's terrific.
Or we'd love to. We just want to give you the choice. That's what luxury is. You have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Or we'll certainly walk with you and share what we know. And I have to tell you, almost any of those that I've done, I've learned something also from the person I'm walking around with. So it's really been rewarding from that perspective for us. That's just been a bonus.
Very cool.
As leaders. So.
Now, Greg, I have to ask you, because I saw this in the paper, that there's a very special room at your hotel that also is filled with some incredible art. Now, obviously, this is not something that the general public's going to just walk into, anytime. But for those guests who want the best Tell me a little bit about this, because this sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it is really cool, and it was a real pleasure to kind of sit and be able to work through that and kind of design it. I mean, it was between Rhonda and I, and we had some great inspiration. We took what would traditionally be a presidential suite or that premier mm-hmm. suite, and we kind of just looked at it, you know, clean slate, and said, okay, what kind of experience do we want to create with this space? First of all, it needs to be, you know, a wonderful overnight experience, but it also needs to be something that the community can enjoy, to host some really high-end receptions, celebrations, whatever it is. Again, if there's something where money can be raised to support something else within the mm-hmm. arts especially. And then we looked at investing in that space into our own private collection. And once we started really working through it, it was about the time that Pop Art came online. We obviously fell in love with this notion of Robert Indiana. So we said, we're behind the man who's behind Love.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took a very formal dining room that was in that presidential suite traditionally. We took it out. We put bamboo hardwood floors in and created a library media room. And basically wow. the whole thing is just decked out. Lots of Robert Indiana, lots of Warhol. We have a Dali. We have two Salvador Dalis in the space. We have a couple of Picassos, a real exciting gentleman from the UK called Russell Young. I mean, it's just gorgeous. I'd love to show it to anyone.
I got
to
ask you, I mean, does the room come with special instructions that say, please do not touch the paintings?
Not so much
that. I mean, because once you're behind the door, I mean, there's, you know, I just, you know, it's
there's a bit
strange
of trust there.
Yeah, there's got to be a
good approval on your credit card at check-in.
Travis DiNicola with Conrad's general manager, Greg Tinsley. Before They Were Famous opens April 27th. For more information, visit conradindianapolis.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll get a preview of the Encore Vocal Arts new concert.
I'll find out about the upcoming Etheridge Night Festival.
And I'll get the lowdown on the St. Benefest at the Athenaeum. May I say beer? Plus, there'll be our Arts Calendar Week Hall.
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.